Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 47, entitled The Life of a Stand-Up Comedian, we chat with stand-up comedian, author, and actress Ophira Eisenberg.
All right, guys, we're live. I'm Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is none other than Ophira Eisenberg.
Hello.
Ophira, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, of course.
All right, I'm really pumped today. First time I've had a comedian on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
What? So, What's wrong? How have you been so long?
Yeah, I know. I've been slacking on that front, so.
I guess I'm the only one that's actually awake before 2 a.m., so.
Where are you coming from?
Right now, I'm in Midtown Manhattan.
Oh, okay. Cool.
The hub of all activity.
Yeah, I'm over in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
But, it's kind of crappy out.
Yeah, we're both sort of dealing with I think Boston is the same as New York, where there is a impending threat of a hurricane right now, and yeah. Nothing makes people in this city sort of more energized than an impending catastrophe. It's such a dark place to live in some ways, but now that Hurricane Joaquin or whatever isn't going to really touch down, I feel like there is a general feeling of sadness that it's just going to be another weekend.
Yeah, I feel you on that. people definitely change during hurricanes.
Yeah, they get to shop. There's like all kinds of immediacy. I don't know what, like it's based on a tragedy. But somehow, all of a sudden, they're like, we need to get to the store. Oh no, they're sold out of dark chocolate.
All right, Ophira. For our listeners who aren't as familiar with you, can you just kind of? I mean, you're obviously a comedian, stage performer, actress, etc. Been on all the top shows: Craig Ferguson, VH1, Comedy Central. But yeah. Can you just talk about kind of how you got into comedy? Was it something you were always doing, like even when you were little, or is it something that you kind of, you know, picked up along the way?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, times have changed a little bit, but when I was a little girl, the idea of doing stand-up as a girl was just not even really, I never even thought about it. I didn't really know. I don't remember looking on television and seeing a lot of women in stand-up. I mean, everyone had the records, comedy records, whether they were Richard Pryor or Eddie Murphy or Bill Cosby, of course, or Bill Hicks. But I don't remember there being a Joan Rivers record, maybe? Like, I just don't remember there being any girls. So the idea of doing stand-up or any of that didn't hit me at all. So I actually didn't even start trying it until well after college. I'm the youngest of six, and I have a brothers and sisters that I've always said the currency of love in my family is making each other laugh. We're not really huggy, kissy people, but there was a lot of sarcasm and one-liners and stuff like that around the dinner table. So there was definitely, you know, there was comedy around me, very homegrown. But I went through school. Was I the class clown? Kind of, a little bit. But again, you know, it's just a little bit of a different time. I was definitely the class clown in my ballet class, which is a weird thing to say. And I will tell you, I took ballet very seriously throughout my youth and even into high school. And I went to a school that was pretty competitive, and at the end they gave out awards, and everyone got awards for, you know, great pirouettes or top student. And I got an award I got the Miss Personality Award, which was awesome. But there's nothing like a Miss Personality world a Miss Personality Award at a dance studio to say, hey, guess what? You're not going to be a dancer. But then I went to school I went to university to take cultural anthropology with a clear career path. I really enjoyed it, but who knows what I was going to do with it. And then after that, while I was basically trying to figure out what I was going to do, I volunteered at a comedy festival just to be an usher and met some other up and coming comics. And they convinced me to try stand up. And I went to a club in Vancouver, British Columbia, for, you know, their amateur night and did it for the first time. And it wasn't very good, but it was the most enticing, strongest drug feeling in your body. Just this unbelievable experience. It hit me. It was like every single nerve in my entire being was firing and was exciting. And I wanted to do it. But it still took me another couple of years to convince myself to take it seriously because I was so scared. Yeah. It's a scary thing to do. Yeah. And it's a scary thing to commit to.
So when did you kind of commit to it and decide that you were going to do it as a career?
I think it was around a few years later, I moved to Toronto with the intention of I was moving to Toronto and I was pursuing stand-up comedy to see if I could make it, basically. I worked really hard and got to know people and had day jobs and stuff like that to support myself, of course, because in the beginning, you don't make money at it. Even in the middle, you don't make a lot of money at it. You know, it's a thing that you have to work very, very hard. Oh, my goodness, to make money at it. And there's not always a lot of money out there, even when you're doing well. So I worked really hard and just basically was out every night trying to, as you can imagine, as people have sort of heard of the story, it's very true. You go out every night to the clubs or the rooms and you try to get on and you make relationships with people and, listen and learn and get up as many times as you can because there is no rehearsal for doing stand-up. You can do it as many times as you want in front of your mirror, and it will never replicate how it will actually take place in front of a crowd. And something that sounds great to you in your head or even to your over the phone to a friend just may not work on stage. Mm-hmm. So the only way to figure it out is to be on stage and do it over and over and over again. A friend of mine used to say it's called a routine for a reason. Yeah. So, and then I kind of made my way through Toronto and started doing all right at it. And then I moved to New York with, $300 and no connections or anything. And I started not really from zero. I started from about -7. So then I had to work up through that. And that was even harder because there's more people here. There's so many great people. You have to push so hard to get in because just everyone's full up. They already have all the great people they need. Mm-hmm.
A few things to kind of touch on there, but first thing kind of that pops into mind is how long does the preparation go? How long does it take to really get that routine down before a show?
Well, everyone has a different process. So I think depending on who you talk to, people are faster or slower. But it's an evolution because you don't just go out on stage and to an audience and go, all right, here's 15 minutes of brand new material. You know, usually what you're doing is that you have stuff that's honed and you have stuff that you count on and you're slowly adding in new things, you know, usually in the middle kind of to couch them or even hide them to hear how they work so you don't destroy the entire show by going out. Like no one would want to book you and have you on their show if you're like, I'm just going to go out and do a whole bunch of stuff that is brand new and potentially die. Like, oh, you could do that at an open mic. But once you sort of get more professional, you know, you evolve your new act. So, you know, I think Louis C.K. was working very fast when he was doing a new hour in a year, right? I think that's what he set out to do. And most people would say that's working very fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Ophira, can you just kind of take us to the point where, like, maybe the turning point in your career, like, where you were doing the small shows and building your name up to making that kind of switch into, like, the sort of prime time?
Yeah, well, again, it's, you know, it's there's never that one thing.
Yeah.
Never that one day where you wake up and you look out into the sun, and you're like, it's all changed today. It's a accumulation of many of those moments where you think that's going to happen over the course of years. But for me, you know, there was just like, I would say there was encouraging things along the way. So when I was in Toronto, I actually did a whole bunch of television there by doing stand up on television for the Comedy Network, the Canadian Comedy Network, and some other shows that they had done. Of course, I came to New York with this idea that those credits meant something to everyone in New York, and they were like, Canada, good for you. You know, if you bring 10 people, you can do this show on a Tuesday at 4. But it's a few years into living here, I got on a Comedy Central show that they used to do. They stopped it, I think, probably about 5 years ago now, called Premium Blend, which was like a showcase for newer stand-ups. You got to do, you know, 5-6 minutes on primetime television in a really nice stage setting. So that was encouraging. That was like, all right, maybe I'm on the right track. And then, you know, other comics giving me work along the way, which is always a compliment. If someone's like, oh, you're really good, so, you know, I need someone to open for me here, or I need to go over here and I'll recommend you. And I was doing like little bits of television here and there. Of course, I wanted to do late night. It's, you know, hard to break into late night, and there's not a ton of spots out there in late night. Now late night's totally changed. I don't even know now we're all waiting to find out where the spots are in late night. It's not a lot of stand up going on right now, but I'm sure there will be. But I got to do Ferguson. That was a big deal. I got a book deal to write a book that was all comedic. It's called Screw Everyone, Sleeping My Way to Monogamy. It's a comedic memoir just about all the different relationships I had. So that was, you know, these was encouraging. And I feel like right around that time, so I guess about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a bunch of things that just happened at the same time. And I, for the first time, thought, if I can sustain this, this is like a real career. This is like, I can live like someone who has a job. You know, and it was some television stuff that came in the book. And then I also, I got a hosting job on a show on public radio called Ask Me Another. It's produced by NPR, and that is a comedic trivia show. We do about 35 episodes a year that is playing on nationally across the country. It's actually, we're very big in Boston on WBUR. Thank you, WBUR. And also as a podcast. And so just all of those things together made for a career. And then I also do storytelling with The Moths, and people are very familiar with that. Are you familiar with that?
The Moth? No.
So The Moth is a very popular storytelling organization that they're very big in Boston. But, you know, it's just a sort of a you would have to – once I have said this to you, you will all of a sudden see what I'm talking about, because you will just notice it around. Okay. As it goes. But it's a live performing thing that also is a like number one podcast and of people telling true stories from their lives. And also a very popular radio show. And I got involved with that very early, and it became super popular. So I really lucked out with that, because it was just something I loved doing. And then it just became hugely popular. So it was just a great combination. I wish I could say to you, October 15th, 2012, I woke up and I got a call from a manager, and it was my big break. Really? The truth of it is, it was a whole bunch of little things, and I'm weird because I have my hands in so many different buckets that it all came together. Mm-hmm. And created something.
Yeah, I was actually just recently talking to Jordan Harbinger, the Art of Charm guy, and kind of asked him a similar question as well. And and he kind of he said basically the same thing as you, and that a lot of people think that it's always like some kind of like movie moment where it was like one instance that really changed a career. But he's like, it just takes like hours and weeks and years of like just grinding it out and doing different things and a lot of failure before you finally see that success.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you have to have a lot of irons in the fire. I think that the philosophy on how do you approach your career has changed over time, where there was one school of thought where you focus on one thing and you just shift all of your energy towards that one thing and you work really, really hard at it until it becomes successful. But I think the more realistic approach in kind of the society and culture that we live in, especially when it comes to, I think, entertainment, but also business, is that you have to have a lot of different talents going on at the same time, and you have to be throwing everything you can in the fire and wait to see what catches.
Like a lot of different seeds almost that you're planting out there in different areas and stuff and just kind of growing them all at once, right?
Yeah, and I just think there's just an expectation now. I mean, I'm sure you're even finding this as someone who, you know, works where you do. So you have to do marketing. You know, there has to be, used to be a little bit more segmented where it was just like, no, I would just host this thing. No one would expect you also to be tweeting and marketing yourself and producing and perhaps booking and writing. You know, I feel like we have to be, everyone has to do all of these things.
Yeah, we have to wear so many different hats now.
Totally.
Ophira, can you talk, you mentioned it earlier, like the thrill and stuff you get when you're on stage. Can you talk about your stage presence and how you kind of perfected it and maybe how others can do the same?
Yeah, that's a, I'm like, that's a process as well. There are no easy answers. And, you know, based on that, I sometimes laugh when I meet and I was this person too, when I first started out in comedy or whatever, I didn't know anything. And I thought there were some easy answers out there, not understanding that the easy answer is you have to be disciplined and dedicated and have a lot of, you know, a lot of desire to just keep moving forward for a long time. I just thought maybe someone would give me like a 1-800 number to call and that would be it. But stage presence, I think so for me personally, it was a real turn for me with stage presence. I was always kind of energetic. A lot of people asked me to MC shows early on because I was energetic and smiley. And you know, I hate to call myself charming because that sounds very arrogant, but I was told I had a charming stage presence. You know, so sort of easy, wasn't abrasive or aggressive, those, you know, or even though I am self-deprecating, but that sometimes comes, you know, with the same package as someone who is, that's the good sort of match to cheerfulness and self-deprecating. That's good comedy tension. But once I spent a long time trying to be someone I wasn't, or I think trying to fit an expectation to be a character version of myself, or at least turn up certain characteristics up to 10. And I found out as I moved forward into my career that that wasn't for me. And the closer I got to actually talking exactly how I would talk in real life and moving as close to the truth of who I was on that stage, the easier it was and the better it became. And that isn't the case for everyone. Some people do devise a character to go up on stage with, but a lot of us, especially I think the trend right now, people really love autobiographical stuff. And it sounds so simple to say, go up there and be yourself. But it's so hard to allow yourself to do that. It feels very, you feel threatened. It's concerning because of course, if the audience doesn't like who you are at the core as a person, you have to deal with that. But that's going to happen. Doesn't matter how great you are. There's always someone out there that's not going to love it. But it took me a long time to find the voice that is actually just me. Which I know it sounds counterintuitive, but it took years to just get to that point, to allow that.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense, though. It's probably the hard, like the biggest reason why acting and things like improv are so hard, because it's so tough to just be yourself and be so vulnerable to everybody else.
That's right. The vulnerability, you put yourself in that situation, and you know, you're basically, it's a risk. It's a huge risk. But once it pays off so much bigger than it did when you were not being yourself, that it's totally worth it.
All right, guys, I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break from the episode to remind you to subscribe to our show. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting episodes. Subscribe now and get all of the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Okay, guys, back to the episode now.
You have a lot of energy on stage. You're obviously very charismatic, but is it kind of a switch that you turn on when you go on stage, like to give yourself more energy and to be more, you know, outgoing and just more involved so that people get involved? Or is it something that you kind of have throughout the day?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think about it. Now, I think that, you know, the longer you do it too, things become more comfortable, which is great. But sometimes I have to remind myself, I mean, usually it just happens because, you know, you get up on stage, there's the lights, I put on like my nice, my show shirt, you know, my fancy show shirt and the good, and I've got the lipstick on, you know, I'm ready to do a show, and I like dressing up a little bit. So I've already taken it where this is a event and a night out. And then you get up there and just the mixture of lights usually just makes me feel energetic. But there are times where I've been working hard and it's been a long night and maybe, you know, I'm a little more tired. And I do have to consciously go, you know, these people are out here for a Friday night. They're spending a lot of money. They want a good time. And you got to get out there and give them whatever, you know, whatever time I'm doing, 15, 30, 45, whatever it is, an hour of some energy. And I like having that kind of energy on stage, and I get a good response from it. So then it ends up being a very positive feedback loop. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. You mentioned storytelling earlier.
Yeah.
Can you just talk about, you know, the nuances of telling a great story?
Yeah. So there's a couple different ways to go about it. You know, I was talking about the moth, which is, if you like storytelling, I really recommend people go listen to the kind of different stories they have there, because some of them are funny. A lot of them are funny, but a lot of them are poignant and heartbreaking, and or they tug at your heartstrings, or super interesting. And I've done comedic storytelling shows where people are doing kind of the more stories that you would expect in stand-up. But I will tell you, there's a big difference between an anecdote and a story. And often in stand-up, what we're hearing is anecdotes. Occasionally we are hearing stories, but often they're anecdotes. They're funny slices of life. A great story actually has, you know, the classic beginning, middle, and end. But even more than that is that the main character, which is you, usually, if it's an autobiographical story, changes in the story. So you set up very early on what the story is about in terms of what's at stake, right? Because every story is about something's about to happen. Something happened that's very important. This story is being told because this is different than every other day in some small way, because you're dealing with something that you didn't expect, or you put yourself in a situation which is new, or it's something unexpected, or something, or maybe you're just at risk. In the sense that you're like, I just need a glass of water. You could tell a great story, which is the day you really needed a glass of water and your quest to get a glass of water. But we have to follow you on that journey and be invested in why that was so important to you, what was emotionally at stake for you, and then what the resolution was that in some small or large way changed you slightly from the person you were in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I was recently talking to a great speech giver, like a coach to celebrity speech givers, even, like, he's really excellent at it. And one thing I kind of took away from what he was saying was, to give like a great speech, you have to really go up and down, especially a lot, you know, there's a lot of things that obviously go into it, but one of them was like going up and down with like the story that you're telling. There has to be different parts. There has to be exciting parts. There has to be kind of lower parts. There has to be contrast is mainly the most important thing. And also if you are telling a story or something about yourself, there has to be some kind of change in it, like you mentioned, where like something happens, and that's really the art of telling a great story, is that your character, whether it's you or somebody else, there has to be some kind of change before the end of it.
Yeah, you don't want to set up a story that is like, this is the last time I ever went to a boxing match. That should be where it ends. You want to start with, there is nothing I wanted more to do than to go to a boxing match. You know, so then we go, oh, that's okay. So why is that? And then you go, you know, I wanted to go because this and this and this and this and this and this, and this is so important to me, and I love this, and it makes me feel like this, and there I am. And so when it falls apart, we have already invested, and I don't know why I said boxing match, but anyways, we've already invested in why this was important to you. And we've related in some way because everyone's experienced something that's important to them and what it's like to look forward to something and anticipate. And then when you lead us through what happened, so because your conclusion is, and that's, you know, that will be the last time I ever do that, that would be the change, that we fall with you and we feel for it. And there is an emotional investment. I think it's really important for the audience to have an emotional investment in your story, and the only way to do that is to set up why it's important. It's very, I mean, like, that's the key.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think that is the key investment, really getting the audience to kind of buy into, or at least want to hear, like, what's coming up next. Like, they're interested in what's going to happen, not what.
And it relates. Yep. They relate. Even if they've never had the experience before, if you express something that's important to you, it could be the most exotic thing, you know, everyone will relate to it because they'll just find something in their own life that they felt that way before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Is that different than the art of telling a joke or actually being funny? Does that go hand in hand with just telling a great, or being able to tell a great story?
Oh yeah, I think they're different muscles in the same muscle group, I guess, for lack of a better comparison. But telling a joke, I mean, basically the what you need to accomplish with a joke is a laugh. And how you get there is, you know, you have 1,000 different ways to get there. You can get there by misdirection. You don't have to be honest, obviously, in a joke. I think my favorite stories are when people are being super truthful about their life. I think those are the best. And it's my expectation that that's what I'm hearing. But, you know, jokes are fast, furious. They can be 5 minutes long and totally investigate a certain subject, whether it's technology or dating or, you know, what a family, or they can be one-liners. So I feel like the art of constructing that is in a way similar to a story, because you are working with like two sides. You're working with sort of just a beginning and an end. You don't really have to do the middle so much. The middle is just more jokes. But basically, you know, it's a setup and a punch. But you still have to deal with economy of words. You have to deal with structure. You have to deal with timing and pacing, which, you know, are all things that both of these kinds of performances demand of you.
Ophir, who are some of your favorite stand-up comedians?
Oh, yeah. So I think, like, right now, I think a few people that I just love watching, and maybe you know them, maybe you don't. I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of, you know, the standard people right now that are very exciting and have great stuff going on television. Louis C.K., I love his show. I recently saw his special at Madison Square Garden, enjoyed it. I've always liked Marc Maron, and I've really enjoyed his podcast, and a lot of his recent interviews are just unbelievable. As far as women go, Maria Bamford, I don't know if are you familiar with her?
No, not.
Yeah, she is definitely She's pretty big. A lot of people know her. I got a chance to work with her at a festival in Austin recently. She's had some great specials. She's very quirky and has a Netflix series, I believe, coming out pretty soon. And she's been on. She's been a co-star in some other television shows on USA and around. But she's unlike. She's not. Doesn't do anything like what I do. But man, it is quirky and funny and odd and just it's brilliant. Brilliant. Who else am I a fan of? It's always funny talking about this because I think about all these people I work with night after night in the clubs, but not everyone knows them. I feel like everyone knows them, but you don't necessarily know them because there's so many great people working out there that aren't exactly like huge national names.
Yeah.
So, but even in Boston, it's just like it's an embarrassment of luxuries how many people you have that out there working every night that are just fantastic.
Yeah, it's. I wonder if there are. I mean, I'm sure there are like people who aren't as famous that are just like incredible, like the funniest people in the world that just like haven't had that chance yet to really make it.
Oh, I'm not. You don't have to wonder. It's true.
Yeah.
But even if they've done, I mean, you know, I would say Maria Bamford, that woman is all over television and stuff, but you don't necessarily know her. It's just the way it is. So there's comics like Nick Griffin, hilarious comic. I think he's been, you know, on Letterman, which I know we are now in the post-Letterman era, but I think he was on Letterman, I don't know, 8 times, 10 times, but that doesn't mean you necessarily know him.
Yeah,
it's just very weird.
Yeah, it is. It is weird.
Yeah.
Ophira, what is it about those people, some of the names you mentioned, or just anyone else kind of in general that can make somebody funny? Like what is it their personality? Is it their storytelling, their ability to tell a joke? What kind of goes into it? Is it all those factors that really make someone actually funny and make someone else laugh?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. But I think point of view is really important, that they have a point of view that is unique and compelling and sort of perks up your ears and stirs up your brain a little bit. I think that's what it is, sort of it's either a unique point of view or they're very good at playing to the universal point of view, right? So it's either like you feel like, oh my God, this is the every person talking to the every person, or you're like, I have never thought of it that way. That is hilarious.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, actually. A lot of the times I'll be watching a stand-up guy and I'll just kind of think, like, that's, like, so out there, but then it's like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's such a crazy way to think of it. And then you're like, oh, shit, but it's kind of, like, true.
Yeah, and you're like, I would have never arrived at that. Yeah, and they say, you know, sometimes the comedian is saying the things out loud that you've only thought in your head, but maybe not had the guts to say it loud, or maybe just didn't have the words to put it out there. But you're like, that is exactly what I thought in my head. And, you know, that's the other side. It was either that, like, oh my God, I would have never thought that way. You're like, oh my God, that's exactly what I thought. I've just never had the guts to say it.
Moving on a bit, Ophir, you kind of mentioned your book earlier, Screw Everyone, Sleeping My Way to Monogamy.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the basis of that book? Like, what inspired you to write that, and kind of what did you take away from it?
It's mostly built of relationship stories from my life, and as I was living many of them, I was talking about them on stage. I mean, it goes back to high school as well, so I wasn't really talking about those on stage, but I had written a bunch of these stories out in the past, and I had told them on stage in different formats, whether it was like a little joke or if I was at a storytelling show, something a little bit more. Or I'd written them and had them published around. And then I had the great fortune of meeting an agent who really liked my voice. It was like, oh, this is good. It's slightly irreverent, you know, because I like men and none of it is male bashing. I always enjoyed relationships. They just happened on different levels and times and didn't always work out. But I dated a lot of people because I didn't really know what I wanted. And I just thought, well, why not just date a lot of people and figure it out by dating a lot of people? And I like different people and different experiences, so it seemed great. And she thought that was a fun, unique perspective. And I had a lot of these stories already written in some form. So put them together, which was a pretty lengthy process to write a proposal. And then the agent was able to sell the proposal, which was fantastic. And then I had about a year to actually sit down and write the book. And let me tell you, I'm so pleased with the project, but it was one of the most humbling things that I've ever done in my entire life, to work on something of that great length and just the size and magnitude of the work, and getting all of the different stories together with a narrative arc, with a payoff. I mean, it was just, it was great work to do, but it was required a lot of discipline and just, sitting down. You do realize too, people talk about great writing. They're like, you just have to sit down and write every day. And you have to. That is so true, because it's hard. And the more you do it, just the easier it gets. The words come flowing faster. You're not as precious about things. It's easier to start. But you actually have to do it all the time. So, I mean, that was my big takeaway. I mean, it was great. It was so fun having people read my words. And, even today I received an email from a friend who was like, I finally got around to reading your book. I love it. It's just like, that is so gratifying to give someone entertainment like that, that they just get to experience whenever they want to. But moving forward for writing, I just know that the only way to be really good at it is to be very dedicated to doing it all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's like anything else, really. It's a muscle that you have to be constantly working. If you don't, you notice that it's tougher to write, for one.
Absolutely. And,
you'll sit there and try to you'll sit there oftentimes for like hours or so and just kind of have blank thoughts come into your head. Like, you just don't know how to put something down and get things flowing if you don't constantly do it. And also, the quality of it, like you said, goes down. It's just not as good if you don't constantly do it.
Yeah, and there's like writer's block, which people get sort of in the middle. They can be writing all the time, they get writer's block, which is a tough thing to get over. But it's you have to start somewhere. It's so hard to start. I feel like that really just stops everyone in their tracks. Or, 50% of people, even sometimes I get people sending me emails, going like, hey, I have this idea and I would love to run it by you to get your thoughts, which I'm happy to do. And I say, okay, and they're like, I'll call you. And I say, no, you know what? You're talking about a written work. Just send me a page. So let me see what I think. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's it. 90% of the people don't say anything, because they want to talk out their idea, which is great, but it's a whole different, that's a long ways away from executing something, because it's hard. It's hard. And I know I keep using sports metaphors, but whatever. But I do often say you can't be expected to run a marathon without training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll break a leg or pull your bag or something.
Yeah, it's just like you have to train if you want to run a marathon.
Yeah, totally. Ophir, you've obviously had all sorts of accomplishments and accolades at this point. What are some of the ones that kind of stick out as being, or what's the single best sort of professional accolade or accomplishment you've had thus far? What are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of? Wow, I was going to say nothing, but let me find something. No, that's just like the looking forward person to me, where I'm like, I haven't gotten anything that really meant anything to me, but lots of great things have happened. I think that, here's just something kind of small, but it did mean a lot, which in the course of the last year, you hustle all the time as a freelance performer. And I think somewhere with the combination of just the radio show and The Moth and the book and doing stand-up all the time, there are a couple people that I really respect in the producing world and in the writing world that have reached out to me to say that they liked my stuff And that is, like, that's just an, even if it's a dumb tweet, it's an unbelievable thing. Also, I mean, this is kind of crazy, but Jerry Zucker, whose name you might know as a, you know, as a director and writer of many big movies. He directed Ghost back in the day, and I think his first project that really got his name out there that people know is for the Airplane movies, but there's just been a ton of other stuff that he's produced since. Optioned his production company, optioned my book to be a feature film.
Oh, wow.
Excuse me. And I never thought that was going to happen.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's just, and that was such a sort of mark of like, sorry, that was just such a mark of, wow, maybe I did something that were real, that was actually worthwhile. I mean, you hope that's the case. I've just never quite had the personality be like to say something like, I am amazing. See, look at my amazing stuff. Kind of throw it out there and you hope that it was, you know, you do your best job and then you hope that it works out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. So Jerry Zucker,
yes,
is that movie coming out soon? In the works for it to you know, start filming and stuff.
Not coming out anytime soon, but we are working with a script right now, which is great.
Cool. Are there any other sort of future plans or goals that you have?
Oh my God, there's so many. but yeah, sometime in the next year, could be even sooner than that, but we'll see how it all rolls. I'm going to do a comedy special. So, you know, that should happen sometime. Yeah, probably in the next 6 months, I'd say. Just sort of putting that together. Don't have a lot of information on it yet, but something to look forward to. And just like the ongoing stuff, you know, the show I work on, the Ask Me Another Trivia show, we have all these cool, we have a celebrity on every show. We had Sir Patrick Stewart recently, which was amazing, and Uzo Aduba from Orange is the New Black, who just won an Emmy. But coming up, I don't know if you're an Evil Dead fan, but we have Bruce Campbell on the show, and Lucy Lawless, which will be fun to talk to them. So anyways, those podcasts and great shows will be out there in the future. And, you know, I always look forward to, I get to meet these people and interview them and play a silly game with them. So just more of that and building on that is a plan for the next little while.
Awesome. That's really cool. Ophir, is there any last kind of, I mean, it's been such a great interview so far. Is there any last sort of takeaway message or send off you'd like to leave our audience?
Well, let me see. Let me do something deep and psychological. Or meaningful. No, I guess, you know, when you're talking about your audience and people just wanting to get into things or wanting to start or wanting to, you know, whether they want to be speakers or entertainers or are just really good at their job, I feel like the only thing I keep coming back to, which I've learned over and over again, when someone goes, oh, what's the one thing you regret? All I regret is that I sat there worrying about how it was going to all turn out. I wish I would have just put all that energy into the work, because once you just put the energy into the work, you're fine.
Yeah, no, it's really great kind of final tip.
But I don't know if you stop the worrying. Well, you try. That's it. Just try. And you have to fucking laugh at yourself a lot. You have to laugh at yourself a lot.
Yeah, like you said earlier, I mean, you're going to fail all the time.
Oh my God.
Doing different things. I mean, it's just, you have to kind of shrug it off and laugh at it and move on from it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, tomorrow's another day. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I go, oh my God, I bombed on stage, left, right, and center, all over the place. And you just wonder what the impact of that is going to be. And then you realize, you know, people forget. Everyone's the star of their own story. They're not all super focused on you. So you had a very bad show. You have to lick your wounds and move on. But if you interviewed everybody in that 300-person crowd 1 year from them there and said, like, oh, do you remember that night when that comic failed? They'd be like, what? I don't know. Like, no one remembers that stuff. So you have to do something colossally, hugely terrible for it to actually be placed in someone's memory. So I guess that's the whole thing about, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, it's... The wise and profound Taylor Swift says.
Shake it off, right?
Shake it off, exactly.
Ophira, what is a place that our listeners can check out more about you?
If they would like to go to my website, it's OphiraEisenberg.com, which my first name is spelled O-P-H-I-R-A. Hopefully you can figure out Eisenberg, but if not, just try. And then on social media, I'm mostly like on Twitter and Instagram and such. I'm Ophira E because there is another Ophira who got all the Ophiras before I did. So, but yeah, you can find me at Ophira E on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and I'm not on. I don't have a Vine account or a Periscope, but stay tuned.
All right, Ophira, it's been it's been such a great interview. I really appreciate you coming on, and I know our guys are gonna love this one.
Thank you so much, Justin.
All right, so take care.
Bye.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. All right, guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.